I just sat there and I kept praying that the numbers and the letters would start speaking to me. They would start saying something to me about how they worked or played or lived together. Something, anything at all, to help me put a mark in that vast white space next to the algebraic formula. AX squared plus BX equals C. The muses were very quiet that day. The gods of math were napping. Even Saint Bodhidhana, priest discoverer of the geometric solutions to Pythagorean linear equations and father of the demon algebra that tortured me that day in high school, even he was silent and witness to my despair. Finally, having reached the logical conclusion that prayer would not help me understand, nor would crying or complaining or appealing to the charity of my teacher or threatening my own health or his, nothing would help me to grasp the truth of the beauty of algebra. Nothing. And after these flashes of enlightenment, I surrendered to the problem itself. Just gave up. I let the equation have its way with my impatience, my stubbornness, my irrational fear of math. And when I did, the numbers slipped into the letters perfectly, and the solution just fell out of the equation, and I was saved. I could see, I could hear, but I did not understand. I had knowledge, but no wisdom. I knew, but I did not love. And love is that kind of knowing that makes the word spoken to our ears and shown to our eyes open, accessible, useful, complete, and nearly irresistible. I came to understand that perplexing algebraic formula by releasing my hatred of math, my determination to control the outcome, by surrendering my impatience and annoyance with the feeling of stupidity the formula imposed on my overinflated sense of myself as a smart kid. Literally, I just gave up. And my vision cleared so that I could see the solution, and my deafness exploded into sound so that I could actually hear my teacher talking sense to me. I barely touched love that day, just lightly brushed against love and coming to understand algebra. Understanding the word sown, on the other hand, requires that we soak ourselves in love until we are indistinguishable from it. What else will nourish the seed? Think about it this way. The word is tossed to you. It's sown in your heart for nourishment and growth. What will it find there to take root in, to draw food from, to nourish and bloom out of? In other words, what lives in that cardiac tabernacle of yours? Around what or whom does your very physical and spiritual life rotate? Will the word land hard on a stone of anger and resentment? Will it land on the ever-shifting, never-faithful sands of compromise and deceit? Will it land on the mushy, rotting glop of sentimentalism, excessive passion, or intellectual indolence? Or will the seed of the word find itself sown on rich soil, but surrounded by the poisonous thorns of envy, pride, disobedience, and a lust for violence? The word might grow in any of these, but the fruit it bears will be ugly, bitter, and very likely deadly. Only love can feed the seed of the word what it needs. If the seed lands in your tabernacle and finds there a boundless hope, an unequaled trust, deeds soaked through in mercy, a longing for the blinding beauty of God's face and a thirst for his goodness and truth, an excitement about witnessing Christ to the world, a passion for justice and peace. If the seed lands in the rich soil of your heart and discovers there this brilliant garden, then your yield for the kingdom will be 30, 60, 100-fold what it would be otherwise. Now you can fight the formula, staring at the blank page for hours, waiting for a miracle, willing an easier, more convenient solution. Or you can just go ahead and surrender now and find all your blank pages filled with the Word. Hear the parable of the sower. You must be richly prepared to be planted with God's Word. Soak your soil in love, then, until you are indistinguishable from love himself.